Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Rangers of the Dork Forest. It's me, Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. You can go to the websites, JackieCation.com and DorkForest.com. JackieCation.com has DorkForest.com. It has the audio links. It has the video links to my YouTube. It has all of my dates for stand-up comedy. It has all the merch. It's got Dork Forest merch and stand-up merch and all of my CDs and DVDs if you have those devices. Other things you can do, Bandcamp. There's a Bandcamp with the very old episodes. Some of them are free. And then there's a storytelling album that you can get on my Bandcamp. And I'm on Pandora and Spotify. It is 2025, and feel free to start donating to the Dork Forest. Yeah, cost me about 10 grand a year to put this up. If everybody donated $100 every year, if everybody just handed me $100 every time they saw me, or PayPal, Venmo, then I would have, I think, about 10 grand. I don't know, but I would have enough money to run this and probably buy myself lunch. And I'm a big fan of doing the show. I'll do it anyway. But if you have $100, send me $100. If you have $2, send me $2. You can do it monthly on PayPal. There's buttons all over my website. And my Venmo is just my name. No hyphen, Jackie Cation. I'm wearing a red shirt. Let's get into the show. You guys, it's going to be an exciting start to this show. I'm Jackie Cation. You're listening to The Dork Forest. I don't know that Kimberly Clark has been on the program before. Have you been on the program
this
before?
This is my first time.
Have you done The Dork Forest?
No.
This is it. This is all right. You have to go get something, though, right away, right?
No, I wanted to put my guac. I wanted to you put my guacamole in the refrigerator.
She cooks, you guys. She makes guacamole. I just made, yeah, go do it. I'll talk about, this is the second one I'm recording. So if you listened last week, you got me to talk to Martha Bowles about my Egyptian chicken that I made, and it was delicious. Oh, always remember, never forget, it's a podcast.
Yes.
We're in this together. Kimberly Clark, stand-up comic, a delight. HBO has one of the They Ready specials.
Netflix.
So
Netflix.
You can look that up.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Netflix?
You said HBO.
What did I say?
You said HBO.
Comedy Central? HBO. Eh. Oh, that's right. Netflix, even glamorous, even more so. Because HBO is now called Max. But at Kimberly Clark Comedy is her handle on Instagram. KimberlyClarkComedy.com is the website. If you go to Netflix, the They Ready series, Kimberly's got one of the like, it's like a 20-minute set.
About
or something,
that.
Right? Yeah, it's awesome.
Thank you.
Congrats. And does the road, is about to do a cruise ship that you're probably not going to be on. But if you are on and you see that there's a comedy club, go see Kimberly Clark because you will enjoy. Now, I was not given a list of back in the old days when I was a child, you would buy a vinyl album and then sometimes it was like a book and you'd open it up. And it would have the tiniest font in the world full of information. You like liner notes.
Oh, my God. I love liner notes. I cannot stand the age that we're in right now where all the music is digitized. You don't get to enjoy album art anymore. And for me, the liner notes,
right,
for me, was a lot of the enjoyment of getting a new album. And listening to new music.
Okay, it was like the
yes,
whole experience.
I needed the whole experience.
Okay.
And I really, you know, I kind of came like at the end of vinyl, kind of. Like vinyl was still a thing. Like LPs were a thing when I was a kid. But I'm more
right.
of like cassette CD person.
Yeah, we were cassettes. I came in on the cassettes and then I had to switch everything over to CDs and then I had to buy a Zune,
or
whatever.
Yes. I have not heard Zune in years. That's hysterical.
I'm here with your old-timey references.
That didn't catch on.
So It certainly did not. But my parents had albums, and they all had. I remember my brothers just poring over. They're just like, the lead singer wrote this. This is how it all came together. Like, I don't even remember what was in the liner notes.
I absolutely, like, I used to love reading Prince's liner notes, although they were very, like, mysterious. And instead of, like, writing the letter I, he would draw an I instead. And it was just very, like, you know, it was artistic. You know, when he would write his liner notes and everything. So those were really cool to read, but very shrouded, in mystery. It was very biblical.
Like a lot of weird references to the Jehovah's Witnesses.
And... it was sexual. It was mysterious. It was magical. It was everything like in, like his liner notes are like that.
It's like a story about how it all came together, and yet also not relevant, you know, at all.
I would even compare Prince's liner notes to reading like the Dr. Bronner's soap bottles, like, you know, all that word, those words that Dr. Bronner puts on his, like, that's kind of like how Prince's liner notes were, because they were just so convoluted and shrouded in mystery, but it was still like interesting to read, but I love his liner notes.
So, like, the only album I think I ever owned was Purple Rain. Just because I don't, I like to buy one album of every band and artist ever, and then I just listen to that album for 40 years. It turns out, but I do buy a new album every
vinyl?
I don't do vinyl. We don't have a turntable, and they're back. I know that. Do you have a turntable?
I really would like to invest in one because I want to start going back to Amoeba again. I mean, I went to Amoeba to get like a book about a musician, but I didn't get any music because I'm like, I consume all my music digitally now, which is kind of tragic.
Right. Because the art, I mean, the great thing about albums is how big they were.
Exactly.
Because there could be detail. And now, like, if my new CD's coming out or my new album's coming out, and I want album art just because it's more fun.
It's conceptual. You know, I feel like the artists were way more, like, involved with... I feel like the music was, like, very cohesive, like more cohesive back in the day versus now, where it's just like they just throw things.
I was just gonna say it feels like the difference between tracks
that's what
and
I was
albums.
Just about to say it's very singles driven, like, you know, music is now very singles driven,
right? Because what was your first like album that you listened to as a kid, like start to finish, where you were like, oh, that kind of had an arc? Do you remember a good one from?
It was definitely
early
Thriller.
On in
it was
your
definitely
music
Thriller.
Days. Oh yeah, that totally had a yeah. What were the liner notes on that like?
That's the thing. I didn't read the liner notes on Thriller because I was a kid. Like I was a kid. I didn't really get into liner notes till I was about like in high school. That's when I.
Okay. So what was the first?
Well, the
liner
most memorable liner notes that I remember reading and really poring over, and it like dragged me into a rabbit hole, was reading the liner notes for Blackstreet. They were the, remember that song, No Diggity? I like to bang it up. Okay.
Yeah.
Teddy Riley. He was the founder of the group. And he was also a producer, which, side note, he produced Michael Jackson's Dangerous album, which had the song Remember the Time and all that. So that was.
That might have been the Michael Jackson album I had. I think I had Dangerous, which was obscure-ish as far as not like. It wasn't his biggest one.
Yeah, that's not even bad.
And then
you
I would hear
bad? Oh, wow.
I didn't have badge.
Okay.
No. I tend to buy like weird, and it's weird because I read authors, but I don't listen to music with the same completion. Okay. Like I read everything somebody's written, but I don't listen to everything everyone's recorded, which is, I might want to, because I mean, obviously, if I really liked some of it, I would like the next one.
Well, I have to back up because, okay, I really got into these liner notes, but the liner notes that like sent me into a rabbit hole, into this rabbit hole, was there was also an artist named Khalid. And she used to sing this song called I Hate You So Much Right Now. Do you remember that song? I remember it. You should listen.
No, I don't.
I'll send it to you. It's a great song.
Please, you know what? If you make me a Spotify list or any sort of list, whatever, Apple, of eight of your favorite the music episodes are fraught with peril with me just because I don't know a lot about a lot of artists. So I always say eight songs that represent whatever the hell we're talking about here. Because Marie, do you know Marie Valeriano?
That name sounds familiar. I think I know.
He's a comic. He was on once. He talked about U2. He gave me a USB stick with 102 U2 songs on it. And I said, you just gave me a free USB stick. I'm never listening to 102.
That is a lot. Songs.
It's a lot. So that's when the eight song rule happened. So if you would like to make
a book report, like 102 songs. That is not
so many songs
of one band.
No, of one band. I was like, just pick eight songs that are your favorite songs. And he was like, I could maybe get it. And I was like, no.
That's eight. Like waterboarding. Like, how? That's crazy. Who does that?
It was so many songs.
Okay.
So how do you spell this woman's name? It's
Khalid.
It's not Khalid.
As like Kimberly. E L I S. Right? Khalid. And she's actually like, she lives on a farm now. She used to be married to the rapper Nas. It's a whole drawn out story. But basically, when she came out though. She came out, her first album was called Kaleidoscope, and she had that song, I Hate You So Much Right Now, which was amazing because it was this funky R&B track. And she came out with this like, bright hair, crazy curly hair, and she was screaming, I hate you so much right now in this song. And it had like these synthesizers and this digital, you know, sound, and it was like in the early 2000s.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, who in the heck produced this track? I had to know. And so, you know, I had to go to the liner note, and that's where the knowledge is. And I was introduced to a production team called the Neptunes, right? So the Neptune, like the planet Neptune.
Tunes.
But they called themselves
the Neptunes.
You get
it?
The double entendre. So
I get it.
I was like, who is this team? And then get this. So it was two guys. One of the guys was named Chad Hugo, and the other one was Pharrell, who you, I'm sure, know. Yes.
Yes.
So
I know
I was
Pharrell.
Like, mine. This was my first introduction to the Neptunes, and my mind was like, "This is amazing!" And you know, I was already a huge Khalid fan, and then to hear who was behind her sound, I was just like, my mind was blown. But double back, right? So, Blackstreet. I believe Blackstreet came out before Khalid, right? So when I went into the, I'm trying to think if this came out before Khalid or after. Okay, this says 1994. So I think.
Oh, wow. That sounds
before. I think this was before.
If she was early
2000s. So when I went into this CD, guess whose names were in there? Pharrell and Pharrell? Chad Hugo. And they basically, right. Teddy Riley was like a mentor to them. So they're all through this
okay.
CD from 1994 before they became who they became.
Right, right.
And like right, Chad, right. they were band kids from like Virginia Beach. Okay.
Oh, that's yeah. that's awesome. I love it when and they're band
they
kids.
They met in band camp. So when I'm looking through these liner notes, I'm like, oh my God. Chad Hugo, there's like this slow song on here. I think it's called Make Me a Happy Home. And there's like this saxophone okay. solo. Chad Hugo was actually playing the saxophone solo breakdown.
Okay.
And they were like integral in like some of the production of this CD. It's crazy.
Right.
It's absolutely crazy.
Okay. It's so, because so what you're looking at sometimes is those producers and where they all connect. And because the producers, they do create mm-hmm. a sound, because the musicians mm-hmm. are amazing, obviously, and they sing and they play and it's, mm-hmm. and it's great. But whoever sort of, yes. it's sort of like editors or yeah, that production team. Are they affecting the sound in addition to?
I think some of them. I think people
mess
like Pharrell and yeah. Chad Hugo do both because they're also musicians as well as okay. producers. They can actually play right, instruments right. versus like, oh God, I hate to bring him up, but P. Diddy, he was a producer too, but he didn't play any instruments. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But he had a musical ear and he could say, okay, add this, you know, do that. Add that or whatever. He had an ear,
right.
but with these guys, they did both. And they actually came out with their own band eventually called NERD, which was really cool.
Okay.
And they had, I think, about 4 albums. And yeah, absolutely. Oh. Like, they're like my.
It spells nerd, by yes. the way. I'm psyched about it.
I think it stands for they did that on purpose, and it stands for no one
yes,
ever really dies is what it stands for.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, it took me a hot second to realize what KRS-One stood
okay.
for. So knowledge reigns yes, supreme over nearly yes. everyone.
Okay. Okay, yes. Jackie.
And- It's seriously, I own one album. Actually, I think I owned 3 KRS-One albums because I really did
yes.
like
it. What's your favorite KRS song?
Yeah, early. One afternoon at 11 o'clock, it was freezing cold. I was standing on the block selling Chiba, Nicks and Dimes, saying a rhyme just to pass the time. The cops drove by, but I stayed calm. The leather
yes.
trench coat was keeping me warm. Anyway, that's one of
I
my
like.
Favorites. It's the one about
was
the.
Was that Duck Down?
Police. What do you
Took
like?
MC's Duck Down. Duck Down.
No.
I
no, no,
that
it's early.
Yes.
That Duck Down's great. Yeah.
That's impressive. Okay,
exactly. Right. Well, and it's funny because everything. And then I bought albums mm-hmm. that he mentioned, like whatever he was like, you know, I really like Eric B. and Rakim. So I bought an Eric B.
Yes.
and Rakim album. And then I bought a Big Daddy
yes.
Kane album. And then I think
yes.
it was 1992. And so and then I think I bought. But just like 10 years ago, I got
okay.
my first Dolly Parton album.
I like Dolly.
Yeah. So, I mean, I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like
Dolly's
her.
Amazing. Turns out she's, I bet you her liner notes are extraordinary on some of this stuff because she's probably got, yeah. So what else besides the producers is the.
I love reading about, I love reading the thank yous, who they thank.
Okay. Oh, are you just looking at the list of human beings that took
thing.
Part?
Jackie, when I tell you I read the whole thing. I read who was involved with what track. Even with Lauryn Hill's controversial Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, because, you know, the whole thing with her album was the fact that the producer said that they didn't get credit and that she took credit for writing. Like, you could read about it. I think.
Oh, yeah, because I had
think
that
all
album.
That's been resolved. Yeah. But you know, John Legend played piano on that album. Yeah, that's why I read the liner notes.
Do you know why you know
Girl,
that? Because that's in the
got
liner
to read the liner. That's why I take so much pride in it. It's such a weird quirk that I had, and
it's a hell
really
of a niche.
And that's why I love listening to Questlove, like nerd out too. And I read like a couple of his books, and he was really big on album art covers and stuff like that, and liner notes. But that's why I nerd out so much on that stuff, because I'm just like, I knew that. And when I'm looking at documentaries or, you know, hearing people mention different people, I'm like, I knew they were working with, you know, together. I knew that was, yeah. There's another one that's really interesting to me. I have my whole CD. I'm sorry I disappeared on you.
Oh, that's okay. You will come back.
I can't
that's
find the beautiful it. But, thing. You know who the Tribe Called Quest is, right? Okay. So their last album, well, technically it wasn't their last album, because their last album was We'll Take It From Here, and that came out right after Fife passed away. But their album before that was their breakup album. It was called The Love Movement. And in The Love Movement, there were some tracks produced by this very mysterious production team called the UMA. That's what they called it, the UMA. Who is the UMA? And so, you know, and then you would hear them like shout out the UMA, you know, in some of the songs. You would see the UMA in other people's liner notes as well. So the UMA consisted of Q-Tip, Ali Shahi Muhammad, who was the DJ for A Tribe Called Quest. Jay Dilla. He was like a super DJ producer who passed away. Jay Dilla. I believe D'Angelo also partook in the UMA in some of their productions as well. As well as Raphael Sadiq, who was the lead singer for Tony. So that production team was called the UMA. And so sound was it was very distinct, you know, like you knew, okay, the UMA did this, you know what I mean? But it was really, the UMA was really fashioned after Jay Dilla's sound, you know, with like the dragged out beats and the dragged out drums that they were doing like in that era of that was probably
And that was his more signature thing that essentially affected the team.
But that was the UMA. But I always loved that too when you would see it in the liner notes, it's like the UMA. And I'm like, I know who
instead like, of all of their names.
I know who it is.
I love that. There is something to knowing sort of like the secret, you know, you're just like that is buried in the liner notes of who was doing. What do you think the difference? Okay. This is a very basic question. The difference between the DJ and the producer, because I know that there's crossover, like a lot of DJs produce.
I think there's a lot of overlap with that, because I think a lot of DJs make beats. And so that to me puts you in the producer category. I don't know if I'm saying this right, but to me that automatically puts you in a producer category.
Because it feels like then you're writing, then you're writing the music. It'd be like collaboratively in stand-up, you know, where if you're punching up something, then you're writing that part of that joke.
Yeah.
You know? So if you're making the, so if you have a DJ, you know, DJ, there are two musicians named Khalid, except for that one, the pronunciation.
Yeah.
There's the big guy
Khalid,
who, is Khalid. That's it. And I inadvertently followed him on Snapchat when I first got on Snapchat, and it was mesmerizing. Oh, yeah. His life. Just, he was, I was there for the birth of his son.
Yes.
And I didn't want to be, but there was.
He probably, the son probably didn't want all the people there either.
No, and he never mentioned the mother's name. And we never got to meet the mother. And that's when I stopped. I was like, you're a lot, man. And plus, he was in an elevator with like one of his bodyguards or one of his employees. And he was like, they were talking about how the guy wanted a day off. And Khaled was saying, there's no days off. And I was like, okay, a little self-care, my friend. Why don't you?
He had a very intense run there. Like,
he did. And he produced a lot of songs that were super fun.
An intense run.
They were pretty fun to listen to, but you could also kind of hear the intensity. I don't know, like Adderall, cocaine laden nights.
Yes.
Where I was like, I'm enjoying this, but if I had to listen to a lot of it, I'd be like,
it's
I should probably
lot.
Go to detox.
It's a lot. And, you know, go ahead.
And then there's the young guy who I think is just called Khalid, who sings Young, Dumb, and Unemployed.
I'm a little familiar with him. I really don't know him like that, but he can sing.
But he sounds very high, but very sweet.
Don't they all?
So it turns out they all kind of do it. Just I've turned it essentially, I'm your aunt.
It's like, honey, lay off that stuff. Lay off that.
Right. Stop hanging out with strippers and hang out with librarians and you'll be singing about how bitches be reading too much.
My dad called it wacky weed.
He wasn't wrong. He was not incorrect.
You know, I wanted to backtrack on something you said about how when you listen to KRS-One albums, like they influence you to buy other records. That's the beauty of hip hop too. And that was another thing I also did was in the liner notes, I would see the songs that were sampled. And so you got to go and you're like, okay, they put that song in there. And then you look for that album by that original artist. And then you're introduced to a whole
new.
I was introduced to so much jazz music. I mean, I was already, you know, a band kid, so I knew a lot of stuff, but still, Tribe Called Quest introduced me.
There's too much.
They introduced
me
to a lot.
So, and just obscure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so great. That's the other thing is you're right. Like all of the, just to be, for you to read the liner notes and then look for these people on other liner notes or like, what else are they working on? And then the song samples, that's huge. That just, what that does is that just gives back to the community.
But,
you know?
but what the disheartening part about it is, though, I'm sure I'm a small percentage of people that are doing that.
Right. If they're not saying their names out loud, people aren't really getting to the liner notes. They did do liner notes of CDs for a while. They're very thick booklets on the on the plastic jewel cases. Yeah. And I remember my first album is a plastic jewel case that I would travel with and I would always break the jewel cases. And people would be like, well, do I get a deal on the album? And I'm like,
right.
No, you have
Look, this
jewel
is a
cases.
Broken jewel case right here.
Right there. It's and then it went to the cardboard ones that I insisted were fold out so that I could put liner notes and just sort of a little letter to fans. And then as CDs became less and less purchased, now it's just a sleeve. You get a front and you get a back. And that's all you get.
Okay.
Yeah. Which on an album, if all there was the sleeve, you know, there you could print on the piece of paper that held the album.
That's not
Remember
good protection,
the
though, for
sleeve?
The album itself. Not that the cardboard was much of anything, but that's not enough.
Right. None of it was very good in the long. I mean, what you wanted was like something that folded. And because I remember, like, my stepmother had a lot of Rolling Stone albums. And when I say a lot, three. So I come from a long line of people who buy one album.
I'm like, I know they had more than three albums. Come on now.
I know they did. I'm sure they did.
Oh, God.
And I will say that I read the liner notes of the Rolling Stone stuff, and I didn't really get it, but this is a great idea. I mean, this is, you're reading them sort of how they're supposed to be read, with credits. I mean, do you watch the credits of movies as well? Okay.
It is, but it's the same thing. Yeah, when I look, and I know people think what I'm doing, what I was doing back in the day was strange, but like, I look at people that look at the credits for movies, not unless your friend is in it and you want to see their name up there. But I was like, you don't know, you don't know these people. Yes, you want to look at the credits?
But you don't know the people that are written on the liner notes. But then you do.
Yeah.
And now you do. Right. It was, I mean, I could see, it's like some people really love, they follow certain cinematographers and directors and I mean, at a very basic level, actors. So, and character actors, I guess, would be the obscure version of that. Just there's just nerd comics who are just like, you know, and then they name some name where you're like, no, I don't know Josh Dunwoody. I just made that up. Or whatever. Well, if you saw him, you'd recognize him because he's been in everything. And you're like, okay, all right.
It's cool, but it's got to be like that. Like we said before, it leads you into these other, it's like a river that like leads you into this other stream of something else. And you, you know, discover another artist, you know, or another genre, you know? So it's like, I don't know. That's what it did for me, you know, but.
Were there any good stories though? I mean, that's what I always want there to be in the liner notes. Like, when Ringo and I first met.
Oh yeah. It was, you know, we were having hoagies. Liner notes. Like people be like, you know, putting like, you know, and for all the haters
they
out
dislike?
There, I can't think of any like off the top of my head, but definitely a lot of rappers did that.
Right. Why wouldn't they? It was the origin of the,
for sure,
of the art form. A lot of just bitching about other people's over.
Oh, here,
hear this beat. Hear this beat.
Here's a good one.
This is
okay,
amazing.
So this is Camp Lo, right? This was one of my favorite. Yes.
Camp Lo.
I'll make you a Spotify. Don't worry about it now.
Okay. And I will repost it, Rangers.
I'll make
see
you
it.
A Spotify. But,
okay.
But this is a rap
please.
Duo named Camp Lo. Chiba was one of the rappers. This is hilarious. I just grabbed this randomly. And I quote, Chiba thinks, the aunt that kicked me out her house last winter. The broad. The.
That is awesome.
It gets better.
You're just like,
the broad that won't let me see my son. the cats that smile in my face and talk trash behind my back. Mr. Midnight, the females that love me, stupid ill will, and all the cats that laugh at my style and then copy it. Love to the people who hate everything about me. Crazy mom, thug pops, and all the delegates that help compose this new shit. Camp Lo would like to thank the entire profile staff and everyone who supported us. You know, that was there.
And then it ends with like a very much, and in conclusion, thank you very much. Don't forget to give to the March of Dimes.
Professionally, but, okay. But this happened more often than not. You know what I'm saying? Like with rappers, that's why you got to read the liner notes.
Right.
I mean, you get an education, you get entertained. I mean, it's just, It's amazing. I love liner notes so much. You have no idea. You have no idea.
That's so great. Okay. Yeah, grab another one.
Let me see. I don't know what else is happening. I want to get.
What the heck?
I'll just grab this one randomly. This is Roy Hargrove, actually. He was a jazz trumpeter. He passed away a couple of years ago. He worked with.
Okay. I actually love jazz trumpet. Of all the jazzes, I have a hard time with sort of jazz. What is the instrument I don't enjoy? There is something I don't enjoy in jazz.
Okay.
But trumpet is not it. I think it's reed instruments, like clarinet.
That's what I play, Jackie.
Yeah.
Yes.
You play clarinet?
And saxophone. Well, you like saxophone?
Click.
Okay.
I do love saxophone. Saxophone, yeah, that is a reed instrument. And I like saxophone. Mm-hmm. I like Barry sax, and I like regular saxophone. I don't like the higher. There's like a piccolo kind of sax that I'm not a fan of.
Like Kenny G plays, like the soprano saxophone.
Okay. Yeah, like soprano saxophone. It gets a little too
tingy.
Like I feel like barking. There's tinny for me. Yeah,
this one is too. It's kind of, I don't want to say it's boring, but it's to the point. He's not saying anything salacious. But Roy Hargrove is great. I'm gonna put that on your playlist.
Okay, I have to say that. This is something I admit on most of the musical episodes of The Dork Forest. I once accidentally sung Miles Davis. And there's no reason for that. My friend had two tickets and her friend couldn't go. So she said, "Will you come with me?" And I was like, "Who is he?" And I was in band. You would think I would know. Davis. I played the trumpet, not well. And I also played the clarinet, also not well.
Yes.
But I loved it. I loved band with the power of the sun. And I saw Miles Davis he played a room that was not made for music. It was a town hall in Provincetown, Massachusetts for about 180 people. And he got on stage and he said, "Does anyone have any floss?" And an older lady in the front row, he said, "You will enjoy my playing much more if you have floss." And so she gave him her floss. And then he played and he was amazing, as you can well imagine. But this was 1989.
I would have killed to have experienced that.
See, there are people who There's no justice, which means, of course, there's no
peace.
And
then him asking for floss. But, you got to read Miles Davis biographies because they are some of the most, like, he was a funny guy. A lot of those jazz musicians were, like, incredibly funny. Like, their antics, like.
Yeah.
The floss thing, that's hysterical.
I have to say that my favorite. Some of my favorite comedy right now
are
pop lyrics. Yeah, just like some 27-year-old woman just losing her mind and just yelling about her life and some guy and how she's not going to take it anymore. And then on the opposite side, there was one I was listening to, and it was this obviously clearly like probably some 22 or 30-year-old dude going, "I know that we're broken up, but I'll still pay your lease." And I just wanted to call him and go, no, you don't have to pay her. If you're not in a relationship, you don't have to actually keep paying her bills. You didn't hopefully have to pay them earlier. Okay. It was, it had a nice beat and the kids could dance to it, but the lyrics were the thing that cracked me up so hardcore because I was just like, they're so honest as opposed to music from the 60s and 70s were honest and creepy where look at that child. I'm going to see if I can get with her. And you're like, please don't. And please don't tell me about it. So, anyway, what are you holding in your hand?
This was Khalees' second album. And then she stopped working with the Neptunes after this. But this is called Wonderland. Okay.
Okay.
The crazy hair.
Oh, cool.
I don't really remember. I like that. Her liner notes. I like that art. Hers was very visual, but you know, I was looking, of course, I always looked at like who wrote the song. What does she write?
Right.
Does she have anything interesting? That camp, I don't think I could top that Camp Low liner note. Hers are super, is no. super tiny, and it's in like blue print. Yeah.
Blue on black, so it just blends right basically. Into the world. Where she's probably just bad mouthing like 1,000
she's
people,
not,
but
though.
Nobody can
hers,
read it.
This is like
she's
pretty like
oh, she's
you
not,
know, she started with to
oh,
my
standard.
Lord and Savior. And she kind of started with
okay.
a prayer, you know, which is kind of cool. You get a lot of that too with like, you know, African American artists, R&B artists. I love it when rappers do it because they'll cuss everybody out and then they'll be like, and I just like to thank God for giving me this opportunity. He's like, all right, play it.
Have you heard Kamau's? Did you when Kamau had that that show? I think it was on Comedy Central or
it was
an earlier iteration of the. Yeah. So Kamau, he had this line about, he was like, I'd love to be an atheist, but I just, you got to believe in something. If you're a black man, you don't have the luxury to believe.
We really don't. Black atheists really fascinate me. You know, Butterfly McQueen from Gone with the Wind was an atheist, and the Atheist Society even gave her like an award and stuff because look it up. But I always found that very fascinating, especially a woman, you know, in the era that she was in, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
To believe in nothing. And just, it feels like more work than it's worth to believe in nothing.
And I wonder what her family thought, too, you know, because it's like, in black culture, the church was very, like, tantamount, you know, in our lives. And I was like, wow. She's fascinating, you know. I'm not an atheist, but I find atheists fascinating.
It's funny about my father's always been a big fan of, he considers the church a social organization, right? And of course
of that,
it is. But, and he, you know, he always wanted to get home in time for kickoff, you know.
Where are you from? Minnesota, right? Wisconsin.
You're Wisconsin. So, yeah, little factory town just north of Chicago. And but he was always like, he told me recently, he said, yeah, you know, I took communion this week. And I said, good. He said, I don't take it every week, only if I've done something. And I'm like, you're 87. I don't even want to know what you think you're doing.
Right.
That warrants the need for you to
go
up
to the confessional booth.
But okay.
What does his confession sound like?
It's the great thing about the Armenian church is everybody confesses to the same stuff. We just confess en masse.
So you just have a general one.
And it's in a general way. Yeah, you don't have to itemize. It's quite nice, actually.
Show your receipt.
Yeah. It's my
your snitch receipt. You don't have to snitch on yourself.
That's awesome.
Whew, that's a lot.
Oh, constantly having to narc on myself. There's enough people in my life who I've made that pact with. I have to think. I'm trying to think if there were.
I just put
out an album, right?
Not a physical one. I really.
What's it called?
It's called Junior. And I would have loved to have written liner notes on that baby.
Right. You should. I always insist on. I mean, granted, my garage is full of physical copies of CDs that you don't want to. Because you have to kind of order 1,000. So it doesn't cost $1 million. But and now when I sell them on my website, I'm like, you would have to own these devices to want to own these items. But or you could buy a giant mismatched packet of coasters. And because I have like five albums that are printed. And I did get to write liner notes for them, but I think it's important to be able to, because I love the dedications. You know, I like on my Horcrux album, my father hated one of my jokes. And I was like, too late. And I said, he said, well, then you have to put a picture of me on the album of me looking handsome. Because I told a joke about how he was wearing this outfit that he insists that I made up. But why would I make up? It was a denim cutoff shirt and denim Daisy Dukes that matched. Like, I could see the pockets. Like
Billy Ray Cyrus before Billy Ray Cyrus.
That's I asked him, I said, where are you going in this outfit? And he said, I was fishing. And I said, for men? Because that is a gay rave outfit. And when he heard the album, he was so furious.
So did you put a picture of him on the album?
And so I did. I put a picture of him at my brother Russ's wedding in a tuxedo. So very handsome.
But on the other side, you should have had the Daisy Duke picture.
Oh, I know. He said, I don't even own anything that is cut off. All of my clothes are finished. My father is very dapper.
That's hysterical.
It is. But so so that's the last liner notes I got to. But did you get to do any art at all for the cover? Or is it just a headshot?
I think it was my third grade picture, maybe. I was wearing glasses. I had two pigtails, and I did.
Oh, wait. Is it a four up like an Andy Warhol? It's on your website, which, by the way, is KimberlyClarkComedy.com. I'm talking with Kimberly Clark. It's at Kimberly Clark Comedy on the Instagram. Her album is called Junior. Feel free to buy it. I know you could stream it. But you could also throw $9.99 or $12, and she gets a better cut of that. So she's hilarious. You've chosen wisely. Okay. What else you got?
Hold on. I should have been ready for this. I'm really going to be a dork with this one. Okay, this is a jazz musician too. I love jazz. Joshua Redman, he's a saxophonist. Okay. I love his liner notes because he's not going in on anybody in his notes, but he gets very philosophical. I think he went to like Berkeley. And he was supposed to be he was going to law school. I forget which colleges he went to, but he's very educated. And like he didn't go to school to be a musician, but he was just gigging. And ended up becoming a professional player.
Right. But he was like a philosophy major or a law student or something like that.
His dad's name was Dewey Redman, and he was a jazz musician from back in the day.
Oh, there you go.
But he really didn't have that close of a relationship with his dad. Like, he didn't really grow up with his dad. I think he saw him periodically, but he really, you know, it just happened to him.
It just happens. Sometimes that's weird the way you just fall into
stuff. But he is amazing because he, I don't know, his liner notes are like very poetic and just, I'm trying to find a point of, I'll just start from the beginning. He wrote, when I first heard jazz, it wasn't, quote, jazz, it was music. I grew up in a household where you could hear Ornette Coleman right next to Otis Redding, where A Love Supreme and Sgt. Pepper's were both in heavy rotation, where Old and New Dreams and a Balinese, he's getting crazy with the word, often shared the same bill. When I was young, I didn't recognize jazz as being categorically separate or substantively different from blues, rock, funk, soul, classical, Indian, African, Indonesian, or any other of the countless musical genres. You see what I'm saying? His liner notes read like a dissertation, yeah. And I was here for it. Like I would just read line by line. And him and
oh my God! Look how big that is. Like it's pages and pages. It folds out.
Him and what is my guy's name from New Orleans, the trumpet player? Oh my God, I cannot think of his name, and it's a shame. His brother used to play with the Tonight Show band. Not the Neville.
It's not
brothers.
The Neville brothers. I have a Neville Brothers album.
Marcellus.
I also have a Taj Mahal album.
Okay.
Wynton Marsalis.
Wynton Marsalis. Okay, so when Joshua Redmond came out, he came out like in the 90s. And so he was kind of considered, you know, like the new lion of jazz music. It was like him. It was the guy that I showed you earlier, Roy Hargrove. Like during that era, they were kind of... You know, they were like, they had their hair faded, you know, like they would wear their suits loose, you know what I'm saying? So it was kind of like you could kind of relate to them. They were given a newness to, but they still like nodded to the old standard ways. But I think Wynton Marsalis was very like straight ahead, very into the rules of jazz and all that stuff. And so... I remember they didn't really have like beef, but I remember Joshua in his very articulate way saying, you know, I don't think jazz should have confines. And I don't think, you know what I mean?
Well, I don't think that's how jazz started. Jazz started as like this very wild kind of deviation or variation on swing or whatever, right? And so the fact that now there's laws...
Yeah.
And there's rules, and you should wear a nice suit while you play your trumpet.
He definitely is into like the fundamentals, you know, just like with stand-up comedy. You know, there are comedians that are really into the fundamentals, and it's difficult for others to like see, you know, to embrace.
Yeah, I don't want to see you in shorts. That's my only.
There's female comedians that wear shorts sometimes, like a nice. Romper
shorts.
Or
I know. And they'll wear a nice romper. I don't want to see shorts. Nobody wants to see your knees. I just, or a longer dress.
You sound like the Wynton Marsalis of comedy.
I'm the Wynton Marsalis of stand-up comedy. Please try not to wear there's like a lot of like onesie overall business going on now. I don't mind that.
But you don't like to see people's knees? I mean, I'm not requesting to see people's knees, but I'm not adverse to it, though, you know.
Right. It's usually just a bearded dude wearing cargo shorts who goes on stage that I think I'm offended by. And it also means, because I've gone on stage in shorts, and the only thing it meant was I didn't know I was going up.
That's hysterical.
So,
like,
how well prepared am I?
I hate my legs naked, so you won't catch me doing it.
Oh my God, there's a photograph of my great uncle, and it's this crazy photograph of him that I just posted on Instagram yesterday, I think it was. It was hand-painted. It was from 1915 or 1916. And I have his thighs. And I don't want them. It's a lot. Like, when I look at him, I'm like, ugh. Yeah, that's what I look like. That guy.
That's hilarious.
And anyway.
You know what else I miss, too, is like getting the lyrics inside of albums too, because I have Fiona Apple's Extraordinary Machine, right?
I
don't have thank yous, although there may be some on another part that I like. Oh, there is a thank you. It's very short. She just has a list of names, and then she dedicated it to my friends who are my family and my family who are my friends. That's very Fiona-like. But
I'm glad she likes her family.
Oh my God, Questlove is on one of her albums. I didn't know on one of her songs. I didn't know that. Questlove from the Roots, who I just mentioned. Yeah, he's an extraordinary machine. I have to find out what song he's on. I'll do that later.
Right, which song is that?
I won't look now. But you don't want to go down the rabbit hole with me.
But, thanks, Kimberly.
So. Yeah, she has all the lyrics are in her CD.
Right, now you have to look them up, and then you have to hope that they're accurate.
That's true, right.
If it's on the album, it's exact. She's written them. Yeah. He's written them. They've written them. If it's on the internet, it's just some guy named Larry going, exactly. This is what I think I heard. And there's a song, you know, the Bruno Mars Sonic?
Silk Sonic. Yeah.
Silk Sonic. Okay. So there's a song. I own that album. So there's a song, and it's if you want to get high, I've got fillets. Uh-huh. Is the lyric, and I for months thought he said, he's talking about how if you want to get high, I have purple haze, and if you get hungry, if you get the munchies, I have
Lay's,
fillets,
as in Lay's potato chips.
That's what I thought for months, and he's saying fillets.
Are you sure?
So I feel vindicated.
Because I felt
I
like Lay's also was like a double entendre for wanting to get laid. Yeah.
For sexy times. Yeah, yeah. But no, I was corrected. And I think maybe the lyrics
they
online
probably are.
Because I think, first of all, Lay's is funnier. And and it does have that double entendre.
I bet you it's Lay's.
Yeah.
And whoever wrote that is wrong.
I hope it's Lay's. Right. Whoever has judged me incorrectly, because it I believe to be Lay's potato chips. Because when you are stoned, traditionally, you eat potato chips. You do not sit down to a medium rare New York strip.
Who is going to put... First of all, who's gonna put fillet in a song like that? To me, like that word just doesn't belong in a song like that. That song is too sexy for that word. Fillet,
right?
Who's gonna put that in? Get out of here!
I don't know.
For them to even think Get that is down. Like wild to me.
So we're almost at an hour. Is there any last?
I love doing this.
We meandered around. We had a lovely time. I enjoyed learning about sort of the deep cuts.
I can't wait to make
your
Spotify
bands.
List. Ooh, but I'm gonna have to listen to this episode
please.
And like write down things.
Okay. Well. Because what I have is
that's a
police, and I have someone a happy
home.
That's
the band Blackstreet.
That's Blackstreet. That's there's Blackstreet. There's Khalees. There's the producers of other things. Chad Hugo and Ferrell.
Nerd. Yeah.
The Neptunes.
Nerd. Yeah. You want them.
Nerd.
I'll make you some songs.
And. Yeah. And then put one of your tracks on it. That'd be hilarious. Just
I'll
from
that.
Junior. And then I'll put it out there.
That'd be so funny.
That would be really funny. Well, Kimberly Clark, we've done it. We've spent an hour wandering around this has been a very different, you know, this has not come
never
up the
come
liner
up on
notes.
Your show?
And now I'm
oh wow.
No,
wow.
19 years. And I'm sure somebody is going to email and go, I'll talk about liner notes. And they can't. They can come back and talk about liner notes. Because whenever there's overlap in different, the same dorkdoms, it's absolutely never the same dorkdoms.
Yes.
Because it's different albums. Though I don't know how you could fix
Camp Lo.
Is it Camp Love?
AMPLO.
Lo.
Mm-hmm.
L-O. Yeah, I don't know how you're going to beat that. Because his aunt who kicked him out of the... Anyway. all right, Rangers of the Dork Forest. Find Kimberly Clark comedy doing comedy. And then buy her album, Junior. And feel free to watch the Netflix special, They Ready, Kimberly Clark. And if you happen to be on that cruise ship, say that you heard her on the Dork Forest.
Thanks so much for doing the show, Kimberly. This was a lot of fun.
Yes. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
Hi, Adal. How was the show?
Well, it was hilarious because it was with Kimberly Clark, stand-up comic. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. She talked about how much she loves. She was going to initially talk about bands. Okay. And then she was going to pick five bands. And then she was like, you know what I really like? I really like the liner notes on albums, the minutia. Oh,
yeah.
And it's one of the sad things about how everything's digital now.
Right. Even the liner notes in a CD were never quite as great as the liner notes on a record album.
Right. And they had this, I mean, there wasn't just what I always liked about the liner notes. If I bothered, mm-hmm. was if there was a cool story.
Sure.
I kind of liked it when there was like a tale of how the band was doing.
That's
or
right.
Something.
Lyrics.
She misses
lyrics
the lyrics.
Were more common, I think, than like some sort of other piece of fiction.
Right. Right. But, the lyrics were usually there.
Right. But sometimes you'd get a bio or sometimes you'd get, you know,
just a little snippet of something.
Yeah.
And the thank yous. She read me a CD liner note from a band. Did I write it down? Camp Love? What did I?
It always felt like if you just got an album and it didn't have any liner notes in it, it was just like a list of songs and that was it.
Yeah,
you'd be
it
like,
did feel like wham, a bit of a wham. Rip.
A bit of a rip. Was, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because the art, even if the art was good, you were like, well, I hope the sleeve has some art on it.
Right.
And I hope that there's some writing on the inside of the sleeve, and then
right. Or if you open up a CD and there was just like one sheet of paper that was the cover, and you're like, what?
Boo.
Is this even real? This doesn't even feel legit.
Right. And then she went down, the rabbit hole she goes down is who the DJs and production people are. Mm-hmm. And then she looks at other stuff that they've produced and is like, I hear the similarities. This is fun. Yes.
I remember when I started to realize that album producers were important.
When was that?
Oh, I was an adult. I was a full-on adult before I started going, this person recorded this. This person produced this album of this person and this album of this person. And yeah, you can sort of get a sense of who the producers are and what they bring to the table.
Such a thing.
Yeah. Who knew?
Right. So you and Kimberly Clark knew, and it's a fascinating episode. So I hope everybody loved it. And you know the rules out there, folks. Rangers, take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?